everyone. Thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio, featuring The Crew, where a former pro football player and a D3 All-Star use strength and conditioning as an excuse to talk about anything but. Now here's John and Tex.
So where you at?
I'm in the north of England, in Yorkshire.
Okay.
In a place called Leeds, a city called Leeds.
Yeah. No, I'm fairly familiar with it.
And it's glorious by our standards. It's 20 degrees, which is hot for us, and it's pretty sunny. It's nice.
Are you allowed to leave your house without the bagman taking you away?
We are, but I'm not. I have to isolate for 10 days. We played at the weekend. We had an international fixture against Wales, and one of the players tested positive for COVID post game. So now the teams have had to go into 10 days of isolation.
And hiding.
But you already played the game.
Yeah, we played on Saturday afternoon.
What's so weird is it's so deadly. You can play in a game and not even know you have it until you get tested. That's how deadly it is.
Well, yeah. So we got tested Friday morning in camp. We got tested Saturday morning in camp, played, got tested Sunday morning, and we had a positive. So then everyone, us and the Welsh team.
Was it really a positive, or was it just a false positive? I mean, did they retest him?
Yeah, he had a lateral flow test that was positive, and then he had to go away for a proper, like, 24-hour wait for the result test. So then we were all kind of hoping that was going to be a negative. And then when it came back positive, we got the email from the team doctor that, right, you're all shut down for 10 days. So everyone else can go out. I can't for 10 days. And I don't even have it. I'm just hiding.
Well, perfect timing for us to sit down with you.
Fucking on the line. Chop it up.
Well, that
we're doing this on the line. It's on the line. I don't think you say that.
That was your first match against someone else since 2019, man. How did it feel to get out there?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. The last game was against Australia in Sydney. So over on the other side of the world, we went over there for 3 weeks. First game in 20 months. And yeah, there was a lot of nerves post-game.
Do you guys talk shit to the Australians? Like, you guys used to be English and then you were criminals when we got rid of you?
Oh, yeah. But then they've won because they live in Australia. So we can say what we want to them. But then at the end of the day, they're living in Sydney on a beach and putting shrimp on the barbecues and having
shrimp
a nice
on the
life.
Barbie.
I'm in the north of England where it rains all the time.
You guys get exiled to a really big island with a beach.
Really nice beach.
Yeah.
That's a long con. In their cons, get it?
I remember the first time we traveled to Australia. Obviously you know the history of it, but I actually read up. Like, I had a long flight from I think it was Japan to Australia. So I read up on all this history, and I remember visually thinking we're putting you on a boat, and I forgot what the boat. It was like a 16, 4 months, 16 weeks on a boat. They get to Australia. They don't know what they're going to encounter. Can you imagine coming over and seeing Australia and realizing now I have freedom? Like, I was a fucking criminal. They put me on a boat. I survived. And now here I am. Must be the greatest feeling on the earth.
Yeah. We had the opportunity to visit Perth, went into the history about Australia, and then they made the least violent criminals the law enforcement there.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And so
once
it was Irish
sentence. You stayed there.
Yeah, and then it was Irish priests, and then the least violent people to help create society in Australia.
So the Irish were the priests.
The Irish were the priests, and
also the purveyors of drinking.
Oh yeah, dude. The cool thing about Perth, there was I hopped around. I would international travel rule of thumb. We got to go to a pub, so dropped in on pubs, and there were true Irish folks there. So we got to learn about the history from them. That was Callie and I, and man, we had a fucking great time.
Yeah, it's
the rule of thumb is as soon as you land, you drop your bags off, and then you go straight to the pub.
Yeah,
and there's no mess. It's bags off, straight to the pub.
Well, we've searched for Irish pubs all around the world
and Mexican restaurants
and Mexican.
Yeah,
that's true. We have tried to find some Mexican. Oh god, yeah, and some terrible Mexican restaurants are being like, dude, this is not Mexican food. I don't know what the fuck this is. This is like something Indian with a Mexican name.
Well,
it's like the north of England. We have a lot of Indian places, and yeah, it's all just
Is it kebabs?
It's nothing you get in India. Yeah, it's well, there's a lot of different dishes, but nothing that you get in India. They're all just made up names they've made up over here to kind of sell you and get you in. It's not like proper Indian food. You've got to go out and find the actual Indian places.
So do you walk in and you're like, oh, there's an Indian person working here, I'm okay? Or you walk in like we do, where if there's like not a Mexican dude cooking, I get nervous.
No.
It doesn't matter if it's sushi, whatever it is. If I go into a restaurant and there's not a Mexican dude cooking, I'm like, I don't know if we're going to eat here.
Oh, yeah, you've got to check out. You've got to see who's eating there as well.
Yeah.
That's I'm like, who's eating here? Ah, yeah, so there's a couple of Indian guys. Yep.
So give us some background on your sport and what you do and just kind of introduce yourself for people that don't know
who you are. So, yeah, my name's James Simpson, obviously. I play wheelchair rugby league, which is a variation of rugby league that is in a wheelchair. All the rules and the laws of the game for the running game of rugby league, as it's called, we transfer into the wheelchair game. So it's not a different sport. Like you have wheelchair rugby, the Paralympic version, which is a totally different sport. You can throw the ball forwards. You have quarters and things like that. So wheelchair rugby league is a total replication of rugby league that I grew up watching, that the Aussies play, that all that. So yeah, I play for my local team, Leeds Rhinos, which is one of the biggest clubs in the country. And I also play for England, which is a huge honour to represent my country. I've been playing for 7-8 years now, coming up to my 9th year, will be next year. And I'll quickly go into this and you can get into me and tear it apart as much as you want. So I joined the Army, British Army, when I was 17. I was a soldier for 7 years, and my second tour of Afghanistan, I tripped on an improvised explosive device, which detonated, and then I lost both my legs above the knee instantly. Mm. And going through my rehabilitation, that's how I found wheelchair rugby league and a wheelchair sport. So I kind of shifted from being in the military for nearly 10 years to spending nearly 10 years as a rugby league player, as a wheelchair rugby league player. That's the short, condensed version.
We had a guy on the podcast recently who was below the knee. And he was talking about like the massive differences of below and above the knee in terms of like movement and walking. And
yeah, we say knees are the keys. So if you've got a knee, the difference, you're basically just sticking a new foot on and you're off. When if you're above knee, you need to get a replica knee, whether it's a computerized knee or like a hydraulic knee. When if you're missing a foot, you can kind of just stick one on the bottom and go for it.
Mm-hmm. So do you,
it's
do you
obviously
have
any, a lot more complicated than that. But
do you have anything like super robotic, cool? Like I'm always, over the years I've run into guys and we've, you know, taught a ton of seminars and, you know, Sornex and different events, and always run into these guys who have, you know, lost limbs. And I'm just fascinated by the technology. If I could go back in time, is what I would want to do. I'd want to be able to design and engineer and somehow figure out like human movement, and then being able to like take these pieces out and add new ones. Like absolutely blown away by what like carbon fiber and the different metals and titanium and how they do this and hydraulics. And it's sad that we have to do this, but I'm just so amazed by like the intelligence and the thinkers and how people are putting it together. So I'm just always fascinated by it.
Yeah. The best, like obviously the best legs out there are manufactured by Germans for the German engineering. And
shocker.
The ones I've got made by a company called Ottobock, and they're absolutely top of the line. Microprocessor knees, gyroscopes in the knees. So no matter how hard you kick out your prosthetic, it will always land in the same place. 50 times a second, the foot's telling the knee where you are. So then the knee will adjust its hydraulics to how you're walking, so you don't fall over. These things are absolutely like top of the range, almost RoboCop style of computerization. And it is like you were saying there, it's because of like war and things that they've had to find these ways of getting new prosthetic limbs. And they're absolutely like mind blowing, the kit and equipment they've got now. Even as long as I've been an amputee for 10 years, the prosthetic legs have just skyrocketed. The ones I've got now, I can go in water in them up to 2 meters. I'm never going to do that, but I can do it if I want. Like walk through water up to my waist, and they're not going to fall apart. It's insane. And they piggyback a lot of like their research departments piggyback other people. So if a company makes like a really good battery that they can steal, they'll nick it and put it into their prosthetic legs. They'll just piggyback on other people's technology as well.
Yeah, they don't have anything proprietary. Everything's open source, and they allow people to design and push. And it's for me,
they're expensive.
Oh, fuck. And you know what? And they should be expensive, and they should be free. Like, my whole thing has been like, if you're going to send people to war, when they come home, you have a responsibility to take care of them, fix them, and let them lead the best life they can. I mean, that's the,
yeah, yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's the exchange you make with your people. You send them over to some far off land to fight some, you know, some war, like take care of your people. So like, believe me, if I got to earmark my tax dollars, that's where I'd want my tax dollars to go. I'd be like, take 100% of my tax dollars and put them into designing bitchin' prosthetics so that dudes that get blown up can fucking sprint and run a marathon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've got like 60 pairs of legs as well. Like I'm, I've got my,
you're like, I'm going to put on my dancing legs today.
Yeah, exactly. I've got these like 150,000 pound microprocessing prosthetic knees, and I've got about a 3 grand tiny little thing that's about that tall, that high, that I just put on the end of my leg. So I'm like 4 foot tall. It costs absolutely nothing. But when I'm just pottering around the house or I'm like doing something in the garden, I'll just whack them on and they take 5 seconds to put on. So I've got the absolute like cheapest things and then the really expensive things. And I chop and change all the time what I'm using. Wow, just find the toolkit, the tool that's good for what I need, and I'll use it and I'll stick it on.
How did you get into the like the wheelchair rugby? Like, I mean, was it something you came and you were just searching for something to like?
Well, hey, I started doing track. So I was running on like running blades, and I just like growing
cool
up
are
playing.
Those? How fucking
it
cool
is,
are those?
But stopping is nails. Like you can't just stop. You've got to like slow down or run into something to stop because they're so springy. And there's so much forcing them.
Yeah, there's they store kinetic energy, and as they move, they continue to gain more and more and more. Whereas like a sprinter will have like a curve. These are like this, and so these dudes just keep rolling. And so to watch them slow down is pretty.
You can see how much they bend when people put the force into them. The whole, it's almost like the, you think it's going to snap because of the amount of force you put into it, and it just propels you out again. Yeah, so I started running and doing track, and I just got bored of it. I missed that, like growing up, I used to play rugby. When I was in the army, I played a little bit, so I missed having people around me and that kind of like team atmosphere. And I was at the Paralympics in 2012 as a volunteer, just kind of like, you know, like guiding people where they need to sit and things like that. And I was watching some of the sports there at the time, and I was like, I need to get into a team sport. I was watching these players go out and like go out on the pitch and tear it apart. And I was like, yeah, I need to get into this. So I just started researching and looking for like wheelchair sports clubs and found one 5 miles away. And then I was down there straight away and I joined up.
Are they, do you guys obviously play on grass?
No, we play inside on a, but it's because it's like.
Is it turf or is it like a hard court?
No, it's a hard court, but because it's rugby league, we still call it a pitch. So even though it's inside, all the markings are the same as they would be if we were on a grass field. So it's still called a pitch. Some people even call it field as well. Like, yeah, we're going to take to the field.
I was imagining you guys on grass, and then I'm thinking in my head.
Imagine if it rained.
Well, no, but I was thinking about like, what do the wheels look like? Like, they got to have off-road tires. I was like, man, that would be kind of cool too. Then you guys are slipping and sliding, but no, that makes more sense. Like, I just watched.
I would love to play outside if I could.
Two nights ago, they had the Paralympics for the hockey. So those dudes are sitting on those blades. Oh my God, that was the coolest thing I've seen. Like, and the best part is they were just launching themselves at each other. I'm like, this is great. Just like suicide missiles.
That's what we're like. Well, yeah, like you've got, you're in your, so we call it, we're rugby league players first. So we might be in wheelchairs. We might be playing inside, but we don't shy away from contact and we don't shy away from smashing into each other and getting each other's faces. We still want to play contact sports and we still want to get that like energy you get from playing rugby league, because a lot of us used to play it anyway. I used to play it as a kid. So playing it now in a wheelchair, you still have that, like, I'm going to fucking smash you and I'm going to get in your face. And if I can, I'm going to flip you out of your wheelchair. And like, it's just, it all goes with the sport. And it's the same as the sled hockey guys. They're like, first and foremost, they're hockey players. So they're going to smash into you and they're going to get in your face and try and kind of cause a bit of aggro. And that's what is one of the greatest things about it. It still has that from like the running game of it, or from the able-bodied like sled hockey, able-bodied hockey still has that, like, yeah, we want to get into each other and we still want to get that, like, that fierceness and that competitiveness out of it.
Are you guys wearing, are there belts to strap you into the chairs? So if you get flipped, you don't come flying out?
Yeah, pretty much. I've got, like, considering I've only got half a leg, I've got 3 different straps over me to keep me in. And then it helps you control the chair better as well, because these chairs are, like, so mine's 5,000 pounds. I don't know what that is like in dollars, but it's pretty expensive. You could probably buy a car for that. And it's been absolutely tailored to my weight, my body shape, my body type. And I'm so fastened into it that I can move the whole chair just by using my hips. So I've got my hands free to move the ball and things. So yeah, you fasten into it so much that the chair becomes like another part of you. So you can move around in it without having to worry about even pushing the wheels.
So if you have the ball, I mean, how does it move? I mean, do you have to actually use your hands to hit the wheels or?
Yeah. So you want to, we always say two pushes. So you want to generate enough power and enough force with two really good pushes that then you don't have to push again. You want to get two really hard pushes that you could, in theory, continuously move up and down the pitch by using your hips to keep compensating. So it's those first two pushes are the things you really need to work on, and you really need to get enough power in that once you've pushed, you can do whatever you want. You can go around people, you can hit gaps, you can get the ball, you can pass the ball on. All have to do in those first two big pushes. If you get a line break, yeah, you'll get the ball in your lap and you'll get your arms down, you'll sprint like hell, but you want to deal with that, those first two pushes first.
Is the ball regulation size?
Yeah, so it's a normal rugby league ball, but a size smaller.
Okay.
Just because you get people with like hand impairments, and when you're inside, the ball can get quite clammy as well. Like we played in France in 2019, south of France, and it was absolutely hot as balls, and everyone was just dripping in sweat. So because we were playing in France, they didn't put the air conditioner on or anything, so we'd be at a disadvantage. So they were okay, and we're all absolutely drenched in sweat. And
don't worry, we hate the French. Yeah, we don't like the French either.
So yeah, so playing over there, so that's another one of the reasons the ball's a little bit smaller, but it's still like a normal rugby league ball. It's not like a round ball or anything like that. And you can only pass the ball backwards, like in normal rugby league.
Oh, okay. I mean, do you guys have like a scrum to start out? Is it like?
That's pretty much the only thing missing is scrums, because you just wouldn't be able to do it in wheelchairs. So everything else is the same. So if you put a tackle on someone, or if someone like knocks the ball on and drops it, you'll just, instead of having a scrum, you'll just turn the ball over. So the other team will get it. Oh, excuse me. I've drunk about 3 liters of water today. That's because I'm sat at home doing nothing. Mm. So it's the only things missing are scrums. We still have kicks. So a kick is basically you hit the ball with a closed fist. So if you want to kick the ball upfield, you'll just hit it. And then the rest of your team need to be behind you, so they're on side, like in normal rugby as well. So everything you can think of, we've taken over and we've just incorporated into wheelchair.
Man, I was kind of imagining the scrum, like dudes linking arms and just smashing together like some, like, you know, but no, that actually makes sense. I'm like, no, it's
killer. It'd be good to try, like, if you could do it in a way. I know people have tried it to see if we can bring it in. And the way they did it was they had three players, one behind each other, and then another three players in front of them, and then the ball would be to the side. And then they had, basically, it was a reverse tug of war. So the three players would be at each other like that with the ball there, and they'd have to push each other like that to see where the ball went. And then when the ball got to the back, they could play it. So it has been tried, but it just didn't work. We've tried it, but it didn't work.
Oh, shit, man. I mean, like you said, you obviously have these really bitchin' wheelchairs that are all carbon fiber, and you know they probably space alloys, and they're super fast. I mean, they're probably balanced, like you said, two pushes, and the thing probably picks up speed. I mean, are they as durable, or is it something where like, hey, you know, like they'll break, and you have to go out and switch out, or are they like pretty much indestructible? Like you can smash.
They're pretty much indestructible. They're like you said, like carbon fiber and aluminium, all welded together, so it's one like unit. The only thing that can go wrong really is your tires. You can get smashed, so someone can hit you and your tire can pop or something like that. But then you've got spares on the side, so if you get hit and you go over and your tire explodes or your wheel breaks, the mechanic will just run on with another one, and then you'll be off. So they'll literally run on 10 seconds, take your other one off, wheel it off, fresh one on, flip you over, and you're off to go. So we have running repairs on the sideline.
Like F1.
Dude.
Pretty much. Well, yeah.
Yeah, the mechanic. You're like, mechanic.
Pretty much,
he comes
yeah.
running out.
You have team mechanics. You've got like pumps by the side. You've got toolkits. You've got spare wheels, spare tires. And then, yeah, people just come on quickly and sort it out. And then the game won't even stop. If you're attacking and the play's moved away from you and you're in back play, they'll just carry on. Someone will come on and sort you out. And then you'll be off again back into the battle.
Damn. So Dude, this is super educational. I mean, yeah. it's super educational. The thing that as you're talking, I keep thinking about like the training, like how you train for this. You know, obviously you use, you know, we were going through your Instagram earlier. You can, you know, standard, you know, strength conditioning template, like we saw you floor pressing, you know, banging weights, doing that. And then, you know, a ton of just looks like conditioning and actual sport training. So is that pretty accurate for your training, or is there something special you do, or, you know, how do you necessarily prepare for this?
Yeah, pretty much. So I'm like a bit of a plug. So I've been following Grindstone for years.
That
suits me a lot because, and you'll know, John, being like an ex-professional, like if I'm playing on a Sunday, training in my chair Tuesdays and Thursdays, then playing on a Saturday, the something's got to give. So something like Grindstone, I'm like, right, I've got my day where I'm lifting and I've got loads of volume. And then I'll be like, right, the other day, I'll jump on like med ball slams and med ball rotations to get the plyometrics and things. So I build around what I'm doing in the chair. So then I'll have one really heavy strength conditioning day. And then if I don't have any more days, I'll do something low key, but just med balls or with a bit of conditioning on. Because if I do too much, you just burn out. Because if you're pushing for 80 minutes in a wheelchair and then you're hitting the gym doing upper body again, you just end up burning out, or your shoulders get destroyed and knackered. So yeah, it's pretty much I follow like Grindstone, and it's done me. I've been through it for doing it for years, and that's probably the thing that suited me the best. But floor pressing is something I switched to years ago from benching, because my shoulders were getting so just beat up from pushing the chair so much that it saves my shoulders when I'm kind of getting all the way down. And I feel like for pushing your chair, from floor pressing, you're getting more of that, like that load on your triceps and in the back of your arms. Like when you're pushing that chair, you can generate that force a lot sharper when you're benching, without getting that cheap bounce or anything in there. If that makes a bit of sense.
Yeah, it's taking out the stretch shortening cycle for the bottom. So you bring it down, let the elbows kiss, kind of pause, and then drive up, which dude was really helpful for me, especially playing offensive line where everything was this way. Opposed, like I never loaded here to come back, so it was always from like kind of a cock position forward, which seems very similar to what you guys are doing.
And I constantly tell the other guys on the team, I'm like, you need to be floor pressing, man. Sack that off, get floor pressing. No, floor pressing. Get floor pressing. It's my thing that I bang on about a lot to all the players, is you need to be on the floor pushing that bar, not doing it from a bench position.
What is there like a conditioning component? I mean, is there a way, I mean, not necessarily cross training, but I keep thinking like if all your conditioning's in the chair, which it needs to be for your sport, and that beats you up, is there another way for you to build that capacity outside of the chair?
So there's a few trains of thought in this, and I've got a bit of more of a like a power athlete kind of look at it, is where I think when you're in a chair, you maximize the things you need to maximize in your chair. So it'll be like I'll run like L drills. So I've looked at a lot of other sports, like running game sports or other wheelchair sport, and stolen things. So like running the L drills and things are brilliant for being in wheelchairs, because you're having to do that really sharp turn at pace and then get back, or doing like the 5-10-5 drills. But I've reduced it to 4-8-4 because they're the distances we use. So having to turn in that chair and then go at pace and then stop again. So I've kind of nicked them from other sports to do, and we do them in my club. But then I think when you're not in your chair, that's when I'll like do the ski erg. So I'm massive on the ski erg. I'll hit the ski erg and do a lot of sprints, or I'll do like the cut off of calories and things like that. But I'm less about, some guys are very just getting a wheelchair and push for 10K. And I'm like, that's not useful at all. You're just like, there's no intensity. You're going to slow right down. You're going to get bored. You're not doing the right things. You need to be high intensity and pushing yourself. So I'm almost in the chair, it's short and sharp, like sprints, things like that. But then away from the chair is where I'll do like 300 calories on the ski erg, or, you know, I'll do like the distances and things. So I try and build the capacity more off the pitch. And then when I'm in the chair, I'll just focus on very chair specific things.
Well, I was thinking because of the way the chair is designed, you know, as you generate force into the wheel, it coasts. So there's no like eccentric load in it. Like you're pushing, and then, you know, as it spins, you're kind of like, it's almost like pushing a prowler. If that's kind of a terrible fucking analogy.
A few years ago, we tried out doing the bleep test, and we tried it once, and the actual bleep test you would run, And yeah. guys finished it in wheelchairs because the wheelchairs were so good. They were just pushing and coasting all the way around. So yeah. they finished the bleep test, got to like level 20 or 21, and weren't even breaking a sweat because the chairs just glided all the way around.
Yeah, because they're so efficient and they're designed yeah. so well that, like, you know, probably, you know, German engineering with Swiss bearings, right? And they're pushing, and, like, you know, as it kind of coasts, it's almost like, God, I can't even think what the analogy is, but, like, that's where I was thinking. I'm like, man, if all the training was in the chair, you'd be leaving so much on the table, and that's so smart that you're, like, a skier and finding other ways that actually have some form of eccentric load and some way to actually, you know, move the dampener. So now, you know, it'd be like... if there was a brake on the wheelchair, almost like setting the brake at half and then pushing against it so that yeah. you could create, you know, some form of friction.
Some guys do things like put weights or sandbags on their wheelchairs to make them heavier to push. But then I'm against that because you're then losing the, if you're in your chair, you need to maximize what the chair is and what the chair gives you. So if you're putting weights on it, you're then losing that ability to move with your hips and you're almost losing your in-tunement with the chair.
Did you figure this out on your own, or did somebody tell you this?
It was mostly me just trying things over years, fiddling about and trying to nick things from other sports and things like that.
God damn it, you're smart. You have to be a power athlete, and I'm just telling you why. Like, one of the worst things that you can do, and they've done a ton of research and studies, and, I mean, we saw videos of people trying to wear ankle weights and wrist weights with the idea that they could sprint and that this would create more load. The only thing it did is it just destroyed their movement pattern. And then yeah. actually made them slower because it was inefficient. You had to change your mechanics to compensate. So it actually hurt them, and they figured out that this was a terrible modality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, same yeah. with golf and baseball.
Yeah. yeah, like the minute, you know, like the guy swinging.
The donuts.
Yeah. So, like, they found that, like, there's different ways, like sprinting uphill, finding different ways to create some form of, like, mechanical disadvantage outside, but always protecting your mechanics. So that's really smart. Yeah. I mean, the fact that you're like, hey, this is my mechanics.
Yeah, you need to be so in tune with that chair that as soon as you start putting weights on it. And some people argue if you're pushing the chair and it's hard, as soon as you take the weight off, you can push it better. But then my counter argument is, but you don't know when the chair is going to want to move and react because it's so important to move that chair without your arms that you won't fully understand how to move the chair if you've loaded loads of weight on it and then taking it off. You'll be expecting to move when the chair is going to move. But it'll move quicker and you'll fall over because there's no weight stopping you from falling over anymore.
There was years ago, this idiot showed up with this technology where he wanted us to basically put a strap around us, and then they wanted to put bands on our wrists so that when we punched, it was like band resisted, and they thought that it can improve punch. And I was like, it can, but if you use compensatory acceleration with weights, it actually works better. And this just feels like a really just hacky, cheap, shitty workaround.
Oh, and they continue to do that. There was a battle I went against virtually, and somebody strapped up one of the LFL quarterbacks. So it was like a weight belt
yeah.
that then straps to the wrists yeah. and then straps down to the ankles and resisted her every movement, and she was pumping it, and I'm like, slow down, girl.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it's I think people think like they confuse this thing with sport-specific and, like, you know, GPP, SPP. They don't realize that, like, there's two separate training deals. Like, we do anything done within the confines of a gym, within the four walls of your training facility, is that general physical preparedness. The minute that you step out and you start training for your sport, it's that specific physical preparedness. Now, you can have, like, a blending of the two, which Tex loves, which we call general specific preparedness.
The GSP.
The GSP, which I came up with, I think. At least it was in my initial talk. That idea of, like, taking specific time domains and mixing them with general movements, but always protecting, you know, what you do on the pitch within the confines of your sport, like protecting that and, like, training for that. The problem is that these people are constantly trying to seep in almost as like a wizardry, like, oh, I can make you better on the field by giving you something that kind of looks like it might help, like speed ladders, for example.
Yeah.
I like every one of those, like, if you were watching the YouTube videos of those dudes that are like speed ladder masters, nobody's ever heard of those dudes. I'm like, show me one of these guys that ever gets to go play in the NFL.
Well, it all those dudes are also like 5'6". So they wouldn't make it to the NFL if they had.
Well, there's 5'6" dudes, Darren Sproles.
True. You're right. But they were D1 footballers. This dude's just a YouTube highlight reel.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But like
I was very, when I started training, I was very just do everything. And initially I just started, like, because I started doing CrossFit football first. So initially I was just doing CrossFit and training in a CrossFit gym. Well, I still train there now, but I'm kind of left to my own devices. I slowly started realizing the things I was doing weren't benefiting me in the sport. So that's how I kind of went on to CrossFit football. And then I was on that for a while and then like transitioned into Grindstone from there. So that was like, it wasn't until I really started on things like Grindstone. And that's where I got like med ball slams and things and med ball rotations. It's not something I'd ever thought of before, which I then graduated into doing. And that for me was a huge game changer because I'm saying to all the other players, if you throw in med balls, like that turning and smashing that med ball against the wall, when you're in your wheelchair and you're going straight and you need to turn left, because you've been moving with that med ball, you learn how to use your trunk to move that chair. And the med balls and things have been an absolute game changer for me as a wheelchair athlete. And it's something I pass on to other players as well. I might need to be throwing med balls, need to be throwing them sideways, you need to be throwing them forwards, need to be slamming them, need to be doing it over the head and slamming to one side. You need to do anything you can with them to get that trunk ready to move and ready to react to you in the chair.
Well, to quote James Simpson once, if you're not launching med balls at things, are you even training, bruh?
Who said this?
James Simpson on Instagram.
Oh. Oh, God. Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
There you are. Oh, he pulled it up. If you're not launching med balls at things, are you even training, bro? No, I mean, he's not wrong. The fascinating thing, and so I think when people think about like this, you know, and they call it core training, it's so that you can have abs. The problem is that's a fucking stupid idea. What we're really focusing on is trunk strength and that like stability within that trunk. And the idea is that I'm going to create this stable kind of conduit for the upper and the lower body. Well, you guys are constantly stuck, well, not you because of all the bitching technology you have, but within your sport, a lot of guys are stuck in this chair. So their legs are not necessarily moving. So now they're having to try to stabilize something that's, you know, ground-based within the chair. So it actually makes a ton of sense for you to do all this transverse plane and all these med balls just to keep all this stuff activated and firing.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things that I never even thought of for years. When I stumbled across it, when I got programmed it, that's the one thing I try and make time for now. I'll always try and make time to just get some med ball working.
I'm glad you found cross football, because also on your Instagram, you got this photo of you when you were in serving, and that's probably the skinniest person I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and
well,
he looks hungry.
Back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, and your mustache.
What's so weird is that rifle's a 22. It's so small. It looks so big in his hands.
Let's see, 2007, and you don't even have a mustache. Everything about this picture screams weakness.
Back in those days, though, like it's changed a lot now in the military, and I've listened to some of your podcasts where you guys have talked about it as well. But when I was in, it was you run. So you're running 50 kilometers a week, 10K, 12K, and you're running, which has absolutely no bearing on when you're deployed and you're carrying 40 kilograms worth of weight and you're needing to move really short and sharp across really uneven terrain, sometimes plowed fields, sometimes rocks. So back in those days, it was just you ran. That's what you did. And now all the guys I know who are still in, like all my mates, the fitness has changed so much now that now it's all deadlifting, squatting. Nobody runs more than 2 miles and you run fast and you sprint. And back when I was in, it was just that you ran and you did some bodyweight exercises. When now the guys who are serving, it's like fitness has totally changed in the military. They're making you more ready for what you're actually going to have to endure in a battle, not just running around camp with your trainers. And
I think the definition of fitness has changed. I think there was this idea that like when people think of fit, they think of like the triathlete, or they think about somebody who can run a marathon. And that was kind of the paradigm. And we've seen this huge paradigm shift to now fitness is very personal. Like, what does my fitness allow me to do? And opposed from like this like imaginary mark. Because it's funny. I talked to my wife about this. She's like, 20 years ago, a fit person was somebody that rode the marathon. Mm-hmm. Now you see somebody who looks like they, who runs marathons, and you're like, they just look emaciated and hungry. Now you see people that are pretty fit, and my wife's in really good shape and she's super fit, and people stop her everywhere she goes and want to talk to her about her diet and her training and what she does, to the point where she's like, I got these 3 kids, I'm at like Whole Foods and these women are asking me for diet advice. And their whole thing. And it's funny when they ask her what she does, she's like, I lift weights, heavy weights every day. And they're like, no, you can't. Like they want to still fight this paradigm because they can't believe it. But it's changing, you know, and the definition in the military, I think they realize that, you know, their paradigm was broken and now they just need big, strong dudes that can more people that can.
I wish I'd have found it back in. So when I was at the height of my military career, when I was like 20, 23, I wish I'd have found something like CrossFit football. And because I think it'd been such a game changer when you're lugging all that weight around and then you wonder why your back's absolutely fried and you're falling apart and you're like, yeah, because I'm not doing any deadlifting. No squatting, nothing. I'm not doing anything apart from running. And then like that picture there, I end up looking like a string bean because you can't eat enough for the calories you're burning out. And you just, you're almost like doing yourself a massive disservice because you're not as good as you could be physically because of the training. And I didn't know anything at that age at training. I thought that's what you did. I didn't have a clue about any of that stuff. I was never taught about squatting, deadlifting or anything. I thought back then it was something that the meatheads did. I just wanted to run. Now I look back and I'm like, I wish. And I talk to guys I used to serve with who aren't in, and we're all like, I wish we knew about that when we're that age, how much better we could have been and how much more we could have achieved just by being stronger and bigger, not just like racing snakes.
So what, I keep thinking like, how do you train? Like, even though, you know, you're erased below the knee, how do we train from like this up in the glutes and the hips and like the adductors and, like how does the, you know, cause I'm sitting here thinking in my head being like, what adjustments could I make to Grindstone to maximize his working? So like how are you training those and are you addressing them and how does that fit?
If this thing, So I like, if I've got extra time in a week and say my game's differently or training's off and I'll do like the optional strength day on Grindstone or the conditioning day. If one of them's like deadlifting, I'll do it seated. So I adapt things to fit what I need. So if it's like do X amount of deadlifts, if it's like work up to 3 heavy, I will kind of change that to just lower reps, more reps, but then I'll do it seated just to kind of get my glutes and stuff firing up. And that's been a bit of a changer for me, but I'll tailor it a little bit.
Hey Tex, we should film the manual resistance stuff for like the hip, the adductor and the glute, like laying down. And then we could get a partner to do that where we could do manual resistance so that he could do glute, hip, adductor and kind of train those three.
And this would be,
do you have a training partner?
It varies. When I'm in the gym, not really, but I can always grab someone. There's a couple of people around.
But this would be great for a team. And then where I like manual resistance stuff for team training, like you guys, it accelerates camaraderie because you got to get with each other. Like so you got to get hands on.
So what he could do.
We're not allowed to get hands on at the moment. It's
if we could film, like there's three things that we could film that he could prep every lower body day and then go and do his pulls and some of the other things. Like, I'm just thinking, like, there's also a pretty interesting one that he could do with bands. So I'm just thinking, like, there's like 3 or 4 movements. So let's film those and we'll send those, man. Like, so I got some, we got some pretty jiggy stuff that, as we were talking about this, like some of the pull throughs. But also some of like the manual resistance, abductor, adductor, and then also being able to, you know, lay down and do some manual resistance on the backside so that we can work on firing the glute.
And my vision is also going to pillar work. So different dead bug variations, different side pillars and things. So we incorporate multiple planes of motion into your trunk work to complement the med ball. So
pillars stability, with the reach underneath.
Yeah, stability to complement your explosivity with the ball. And then these to your team, yeah.
The other one I was thinking, if he was in a side pillar and he had a like a foam roller underneath his hip in the side pillar, we could do starfish. Uh-huh. And there's like a whole bunch of different movements if he was here and to be able to reach this one.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I'm like my head's exploding. Are you in it? All the different, you know, I mean.
I'm glad that it's giving you some good mental challenges as well. Well, it's opening new doors.
Well, if anybody's following one of our programs, whether it be Grindstone, who has special considerations and needs some special stuff, like hit us up, please email me because that is by far the coolest thing we do. When I get to and say, how can I adapt this program from somebody that can't do it as written? Like you're in a high level athlete who's using the training program in a unique way. To me, that's by far way more exciting for us to geek out on than me answering like the standard question and watching a video on and like, you know, foot position, bar position, and all this other stuff.
Well, on that note, that's the strength of the methodology because it's still within primal movements, planes of motion, and towards peak performance to accomplish task.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's still, I mean, the power athlete methodology is built on this idea of athletic blueprint, you know, planes of motion, the whole deal. But it, you're still moving within those planes of motion. We're just adding some turbo wheels instead of having some, you know, some sticks to run on. So it's pretty fascinating. And I love the thought of everything being transverse. Like here you are pushing this way, and then as you have to move, everything becomes like a, this transverse plane, but you're not necessarily taking steps. So you're using your upper body to actually torque it. It's pretty fascinating. Like,
it's something that took me a while to figure out. Like I said, I was going to the gym and doing normal stuff, and it was normal stuff. But it was getting into like cross football and stuff, and then just getting all those different ideas. Like if I'm away, like if I go on holiday or something, I'll take a kettlebell with me. I won't do anything. I'll do everything unilaterally because I know how important that trunk is. So everything I do, if I'm on holiday and I'm doing some training and I've only got one thing, it'll be constantly be unilateral just to keep smashing that trunk as well and keep those different planes of motion.
Well, I also got to compliment you. You don't wear fingerless racing gloves. I would be talking so much shit to the other guys that are all gloved up. Man, you're just going...
Dude, you wear those things constantly in the gym.
Those are my drinking gloves. I just wear the one...
Because you don't want your hand to get cold because you nurse?
It's like a koozie for my hand. But, dude, you're rocking it, and, dude, that's fucking awesome.
You can't wear anything.
I see some guys in these videos.
But, I mean, he was talking about the heat and the ball getting soggy and all that. Like, yeah. You know, that becomes
you need to
a huge
be very, problem. You need to be very, like... minimal stuff on you. Like I know guys who wear knee pads and elbow pads and things. I'm just like, you need to get rid of all that and just be as much as it's just you in the chair. Like I know it's like elbow pads for me, they've just been like, no, something's gonna go wrong with it. It's something else, it'll slide down or it'll get too tight or it'll restrict. I think you've just got to get rid of all that and just go like, I'm gonna get hit, I'm gonna fall over, I'm gonna smash my elbows. I've just gotta just roll with it. Like don't carry on with any of that nonsense.
Do you do any dedicated grip training? Like, is there any dedicated grip training?
Yeah, I've got the, I always forget what they're called. From my climbing days, do you know the old wrist balls where you pull the string and the ball goes? So I'll just sit with that and watch TV.
Gyro balls, like a gyro.
Yeah. I can only do them one-handed though because my left hand's smashed to pieces. So I just do it one-handed. So I've got one really jacked forearm and one really skinny forearm.
Did your left arm get damaged in the blast?
I lost two fingers. So I lost my little finger and my ring finger, and my wrist is fused. So it's fused in one motion, one plane. Mm-hmm. So then if you start doing a gyro ball, it just stops straight away. So I just do it one-handed now.
Can you do pull-ups?
Yeah, I've got a little hook, that I've. It's one of those things about like me adapting things again. I found this. I don't even know where I found it years ago. So I bought like six of them. And I keep them upstairs in case one of them breaks and I just get another one down. And it's just like a thing that'll go around my wrist, a bit like a Velcro strap with a double hook on it. So you just loop that over the top of a bar. Same with like any rows or anything like that. You just put this hook on and then you're off.
Yeah, when I owned a gym, CrossFit Balboa, I had a client who was born without a hand. And she was such a savage. Like every time I'd see her train, she'd be in there, she'd do push-ups on she called it her nub, so she'd be doing push-ups.
She could actually
stand and get the bar underneath it and do push jerks, and then she would wear this kind of hook apparatus, and she like easily had like 25 dead hang pull-ups. She was tougher than fucking nails. And I remembered like asking her one time, I'm like, what's the deal? And she's like, well, I was never born with a hand, so as a little kid, you know, to climb trees and do all this stuff, like I just had to figure it out, and I don't have any nerve endings, so it was never there, so I never noticed it being missing. And I remember being
it's all about you adapting to the environment, not the environment adapting to you. So if you constantly try and have the environment adapted for you, when you get put in a situation where it isn't adapted, you're not going to know what to do. So you need to find ways for you to adapt to the environment. Like, I'm not saying that you need to be like dragging yourself around and not use a wheelchair, but you need to find those battles and things that you can adapt to them And so then if something goes wrong, you're not going to be panicking and stuck.
Is this a universal mindset for your teammates? Or do you find guys that are new to this style of sport that then need some encouragement and leadership from guys that have been around 10 years like yourself?
At the international level, that's pretty much the same kind of mentality. Because we've got guys there like myself who are injured soldiers. We've got guys from motorbike accidents, guys who caught really random, obscure diseases that have paralyzed them, guys who are in like other accidents and things. So the mentality when we get into international camps is very much like we make do, we adapt, and we get on with it. But then at domestic level, when I'm back at my club, that's where you've got to weigh up the athletes who've been doing it for a while, who are really competitive and want to win trophies. And then at the same time, you've got the athletes and the players coming in the door who you want to get into the sport and you want to get to that level where they're going to compete. So you've got to tailor how you do things depending on what athlete you're speaking to. So when we have our like team training days, we'll have the first team players who you can like run them into the ground basically, and they'll keep coming back for more. And then we'll have like a development set up as well, where the new players will start slower and get used to the sport and get used to it. The last thing you want to do is throw those kind of newly disabled players or players who are just starting to get into a sport in with these seasoned athletes, because they're just going to get smashed to pieces and walk out the door or roll out the door. So you do have to tailor it depending on who you've got at club. But then internationally, it's just it's a free for all.
So you've been injured for 10 years? Like
the 2009, so 12 years, 12 years. It's been so long ago now, I can't even remember. Yeah, 2009.
So 12 years. Yes. Was there I'm just thinking like the progression. Like there's probably like this happens, and then there's like an acceptance and maybe like a bit of depression and what's my place in this world kind of like transition you go through. And then you find something like you're doing now and it gives you purpose, and there's like camaraderie because you're training with other people that have a similar disability and are in a similar situation. And the best part is everybody's out there going hard and nobody fucking cares, you know?
Yeah.
Like so you fall down, nobody's coming over to pity you or nothing. It's like fucking get up, and everybody is kind of on equal playing ground and treating you guys like athletes. And you know, all of a sudden now you're training and you have purpose and you're traveling in this. And as I'm thinking, like, you know, because we had Justin Lysik on the podcast and he's in this like, well, I don't want to do any of this stuff. And he's kind of in this like 2 year transition. And I'm thinking like, here you are 12 years later and you're like, I'm going to go out and fucking mash people. You know, this is what I have, but it's like an even playing ground. And I wonder if there's like just this like mental transition of like acceptance. Now I'm going to fucking flourish in this environment. And, you know, and I think the hard part too is, for people that, you know, and this is for anybody, and we saw this really with COVID, people need community, they need camaraderie, they need competition, they need sport, they need to talk shit and have fun and like, you know, fucking battle and yell and scream and cry and win and lose and do all these things to feel human. And I sometimes wonder when people isolate, if all of a sudden that becomes the source of their depression. You know, you're out there training and you're not feeling sorry for yourself, you're out there just fucking trying to, you know, run the next dude down and be like, this dude ain't gonna beat me. And that doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, if you're, you know, on two wheels, on two legs, or, you know, I mean, you're farther ahead than, you know, the fucking fat ass sitting on the couch just bitching at everybody else, you know, like looking at the Olympics and being like, oh, those people suck.
You know? That's one of the reasons I stopped track. For some reason, I was like, oh, I really want to run. I want to run. And then I did that for a little bit. I was like, I'm just getting no satisfaction out of this. None whatsoever. So that's when I started looking for the team sports. And I think the track thing came from, and I don't mind talking about like my injuries or anything at all, you know, when it happened, it was 12 years ago now. I've like got a whole new life since then. But I think when I was going through my rehabilitation, I had all these, had physiotherapy, I had prosthetics, I had all these tools laid out for me, but I'm the one who has to do it. I'm the one who has to be like, I need to go up prosthetics. I need to go and do circuit training. I need to go to the gym. Nobody's going to do it for me. So I think when I was going through my rehab initially, the reason I got into track was because it was very soul focused, where I was like, I have to do this. No one's going to help me. I'm going to do this. Like I did with the other things of rehabilitation. I was like, I have to go and do this. Nobody's going to do it for me. And I think I reached a point mentally where I'd broken the barrier of that, where I'd suddenly I was confident in my new body. I was confident walking in prosthetics. I was confident in my abilities and everything, that's when I kind of went, right, now I need to find that community and that team sport. But I think the original, the early part of the journey was just me being so like fucking stubborn and having my head down and charging forward that I didn't even think of that. I just thought about just doing it, doing what was in front of me, and I had to do it and nobody else was going to do it. And then that's when I came out the other side of that. I was like, right, now I'm going to get to a team sport and get that community and get those other people around me.
You played rugby growing up. Did you play any other sports?
Yeah. No, just like I did cross country for my school, but it was mostly just rugby. Like I'm in the north of England where rugby league is huge up here. I was awful at football, well, soccer. I was absolutely awful at it. So it was just rugby league was the only sport that I played. Played it at school, played it with my mates, and that was really the only school. And I think like when I used to do track or cross country, that's one of those, I've always had that mentality. And I was talking about someone this recently. I remember when you have like school sports days, the furthest you run was like 800 meters. And I was always the kid who was like, I'll run the 800 meters because it was the hardest race. I was like, I'll do that. Nobody else wants to do that. I'll do that. And most of the other kids just wanted to run the 100 meters and sit down in the sun and watch everyone else run. So I was always that kid who was like, what's the hardest race? 800? Yeah, I'll do that one.
It's still the hardest race. I don't know if you've been watching the Olympic trials.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I'm such a fan of the Olympics. We DVR them. We watch them every night with the kids. And last night we were watching two nights ago we watched the 10,000, the 5,000, 1500, and then last night was like the women's 100 and then the men's 800. Dude, that 800 is such a suicide race.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like those dudes, I mean, and the crazy part is they ran I think the dude ran 148, it's insane.
It's that race where you've got to really want it. You've got to want it because it's horrendous. You've got to really want to win that race. Like that's the kind of race it is to me. Yeah,
Dude, it's and then the the chick that won the 10,000 was such a savage. She literally came out on this blistering pace and like tried like slowing down, trying to get these girls to follow her. And then as soon as she got like four or five of them to kind of follow her, she just turned on the afterburners and ran these girls into the ground. She was lapping people.
Yeah,
like there must be so much hate in that girl's heart. She's like, somebody called me fat 20 years ago, and I'm gonna fucking prove them wrong or something. Because like this chick was an absolute, and then she gets done, not even breathing heavy. I mean, is she like I'd be dead for a fucking month.
Well, she's got a peak in a month, so
fuck,
just do enough to get there and then fucking ham.
So when,
she's just got so good at regulating how she does it that she doesn't even, when she crosses that line, she's just gone at that level constantly. That when she crosses the line, she's like, yeah, I'm good.
But like,
ready for the next one?
Yeah, it's the run sports to me are just absolutely blow my mind. Like just like how fast, like the 21-year-old girl who won the 100 meters, like it's not Shakira. It's like it's something similar to that.
Oh, right on. I know exactly what you're talking
about. Shakira, she's from Houston. She had the bright yellow hair. She is so fast. She like kind of
LSU student.
LSU national champion. She basically dogs like the first third. She comes out real slow. Everybody's beating her, and then she hits these afterburners. And she ran. I think she ran sub 11 seconds. It was like something crazy, like 10.8.
Oh yeah, she beat some of the men trials times.
Yeah, 10.84, and she's 21.
We had a GB Paralympian and called Tanny Gray Thompson. She came in and spoke to the wheelchair team, and she'd been to like three Paralympics, like worked constantly for years to be an elite athlete. And she was saying to us after three Paralympics, God knows how many races and everything, her whole career can be broke down to 19 minutes. 19 minutes of work and competition over thousands and thousands of hours of training and work and graft just for 19 minutes over three Paralympics. So those athletes do so much work for such a short period of time. And 100 meter sprinters, the amount of training they put into for like a 12 second race, it's just, it's mind blowing how hard they go for that one moment of glory.
Like even worse than that. Think about like the gymnastics. We were also watching women's and men's gymnastics. Like normally those girls peak at like age like 14, 15, 16. And then Simone Biles is 24.
Mm-hmm. Also and she Houston. Is
absolutely fucking smashing these people to the point where they were like, the only person in the world that can do this, there's one other man, and then Simone Biles that can do this move. Or like this move was like named after her. Like it's inspiring to see the world's best athletes step on the stage and be the best in the world at that moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, like, at least for me, that's where I get like kind of wrapped up in this, because I want to see the best in the world have their best performance and like fucking dominate. Like, I was watching the dude, they showed clips of the guy throwing the shot put, the guy that won.
Set the record. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just had this fucking moment where everything peaked and he just threw it. Fucking best in the world.
He knew.
The best. And he knew as soon as it left his hand, he started screaming. So what? So this, you guys are going, or you're in the Paralympics in Japan this year?
No. So we, the other version, the wheelchair rugby, where you use the round ball, that's in the Paralympics. We follow the International Rugby League calendar. So we follow, so like the Rugby League calendar is domestic season. Then at the end of the year, where they have internationals, like an international period. So we're in sync with our governing body, which is International Rugby League. So we follow them through. So we have athletes who are in like wheelchair basketball teams who are going to go to Japan and compete. Then they'll come back and they'll slot back into like the wheelchair rugby league calendar. Mm-hmm. So we follow like a different calendar. So we've like our domestic season is we play all year. Then at the end of the year, we'll have we've got the World Cup this year. So for the first time in history, the men, the women, and the wheelchair competitions all held at the same time. So over 6 weeks, they'll have like the men's national teams, so England, Australia, the women's national teams, and the wheelchair national teams all competing at the same time. And it's never been done before in any sport. And it's all free to air on BBC as well. So you'll be watching BBC and you'll be watching Australia versus Canada. The next day, you'll be watching the women's teams, New Zealand versus Australia.
Where's it taking place? Is it in the UK?
England. Yeah, it's in England. Yeah. It's like 65 games over 6 weeks, just spread all around the country, televised on BBC as well.
Oh, shit. That's badass.
It's mental. So this weekend, when we played, so on the Friday night, England women played England Wales. England women played women's Wales team. And then straight after that, England men's team played like a combined nations team. And then the next day, England wheelchair played Wales wheelchair. So in 24 hours, we had all three national sides playing in the country and all televised live as well. So it could all be watched. And then it was like a bit of a teaser to what's coming at the end of the year.
Is you've obviously traveled all over the world to play. Pretty close.
Enough. Yeah.
How is traveling with all that gear?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, when we were in Australia, we were traveling every 3 days. So we'd play. So we'd land, like acclimatize, train. Next day we'd captain's run, play, fly. So then, and as the kind of the 3 weeks went on, the time we had in between games got less and less because we were catching up with like where we were flying to. And when we have 10 players, so we have 10 wheelchairs, 20 wheels, 20 spare wheels, all the kit and equipment, first aid kit, spinal boards, all the medical equipment. And I remember once we were in Sydney and we looked out the window and they had three huge aircraft pallets of all our kit lined up waiting to go on the plane. And then one pallet of just everyone else's luggage. So our kit on the plane took up 3/4 of the baggage allowance on the whole flight. Just kit thrown in there.
And you guys are flying commercial too, which is hilarious.
Yeah. And then as soon as you land and you get all the kit off, we were always missing something, whether it was a bag or a wheel or something wouldn't make it through. So we'd have to wait and that'd get sent to the hotel later on. But it was... We'd empty all the kit in the airport when we landed to see what we were missing. So then we'd get all the wheelchairs off, make sure they hadn't been thrown in the back of some van and like bent or broken or the wheels were fine. So before we even left the airport, we'd get all our kit and equipment out and inventory it to make sure it was okay. So we couldn't go back up to the airport and be like, you guys have just fucked half our, these chairs cost £5,000 and you've just broke one in half. So we'd check all the kit before we even left.
So when you guys go to the airport, do you wear your prosthetics in the airport or do you guys go wheelchairs?
It varies. I'll wear my prosthetics, but some of the guys will use the wheelchairs, and it all depends like what's come. But when we went to Australia, because we landed in, I can't remember if we landed in Singapore or Abu Dhabi, so you'd flown like 15 hours, and you get a 3-hour layover, then you fly another 15 hours. That was where the guys who had wheelchairs came out on top, because the guys who had the prosthetics on for 15 hours were then trying to walk around a airport just knackered and absolutely shattered, while the guys in wheelchairs were just zipping about all over the place, like loving it. And then we had to get back on the flight. So then the guys in prosthetics were dragging themselves along to get on this plane, when the guys in wheelchairs they'd picked the easy option. So next time, if I ever did it again, I'll definitely go in my wheelchair and ditch the prosthetics.
Yeah, no, I know when we used to travel, it was an absolute fucking, the amount of shit that they would bring. I mean, we had our own private plane. I mean, it was just crates of stuff. And I mean, as I'm sitting there thinking, like, it would have been so much easier to play basketball where you're like, well, here's a pair of shorts and a pair of shoes. But I mean, these guys have even more. I mean, not only do they have all their gear, but I mean, just different apparatuses, spare chairs, parts. I mean, it must be pretty amazing. And then how many
people horror stories.
How many guys are on your team?
10. So you have 10 players in the squad. And so, yeah, once you get 10 chairs in somewhere, that's a lot of real estate taken up. And then the wheels and everything. So, yeah, you get the 10 players, all mixed disabilities as well. So it's not, you've not just got 10 amputees. You've got a couple of amputees. You've got spinal guys who can't feel anything from the chest down. You've got, so the needs of the athletes is so varied as well, that you've got, they have to take that into consideration as well. It's not just one size fits all. Everyone's different and unique. And we have male and female athletes together. Mm. So like a team is totally open. So you could have male and female players, and we do. So then straight away you've got the gender split and the disability split in the teams. So you've got the team managers have to think about all those variables when we're traveling as well.
Damn.
So yeah, I don't have to worry about that. That's their job.
Well,
someone else can worry about that.
James, we got games to look forward to. So where do people want to head to follow you, to watch your training, and then be ready when you're going live on the BBC?
Yeah, well, the game we played at the weekend, that's, you guys will probably get it over there, but that was on BBC iPlayer, and that's like free to watch by anyone, and that's out there. You have to see if Harry can get you a copy and send it over to you.
Yeah, they don't let us get the BBC, because then we would get some form of world news, and then we might learn, and then here in the United States, we might learn about like the rest of the world, and then not just be focused on what the fuck the Kardashians are doing.
Yeah,
it's true. Like,
get you a stream, you a copy off, and send you it over somewhere.
Yeah, no, old Harry Hepton stall. No, it's yeah, we'll work some magic and try to figure it out. I mean, it's got to be on the internet. It's got to be on the line in some interesting way. But yeah, man, it was. It was great to meet you, and like officially in person, but also you know, get the wheels spinning for what, you know, for some adaptations we can make to Grindstone. It's always killer when we get to meet people that do the training and then actually use it in a meaningful way, not just like, oh, I'm trying to get in shape for my vacation and, you know, not being out of shape dad with three, which is by far is super rewarding for me, but it's always cool when we get like a practical application of the program, especially in such a unique setting like you're using it, man. It's thank you.
No, thanks for writing it. Yeah, it's definitely been a game changer for me. And come the World Cup at the end of the year, hopefully I'll convince a lot of the other players to jump ship as well and get on it and start throwing med balls around.
Well, let me know, man. I'm sure we could help in any way and throw some adaptations out there. But yeah, that's badass.
No, great. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Cool.
All right, James. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
See you in a bit. Take it easy.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head to powerathletehq.com/training to choose from a number of programs to meet your specific performance goals. And if you like to break a mental sweat too, visit academy.powerathletehq.com and become a real stakeholder in you or your athlete's success. Until next time, bye!
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.